I'm on a mission to help high flyers just like yourself, who until now have let the fear of public speaking hold them back from making a bigger impact. Join me as I find out the secret sauce from the world's leading speakers to make your speeches more interesting, enjoyable to give, and impactful for your audience. That's the mission, and this podcast will get you there. My name's Victor Ahipeni, and this is the Public Speaking Secrets Podcast. Speaker Nation, what's happening? Welcome to another episode of Public Speaking Secrets. I'm your host, Victor Ahipeni, and I'm super excited to have you here. If you're having a stressed out day, week, or month, we'll hopefully have somebody who'll be able to put your mind at ease. I've got Brett Hill, who is a speaker who's gone through and transitioned through a lot of different spaces in the speaking side of things to get to where he is, where he runs a business called Language of Mindfulness that can be found at languageofmindfulness.com. And we're going to talk about how he got from speaking at to and with large corporate organizations like Microsoft to what he's doing now. So welcome to the show, Brett. Super excited to have you on.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
So give us a bit of a rundown on what it is you do now. And then I think we'll have a look at how you kind of we'll retrace the breadcrumbs to find out how you actually got there.
Well, right now I'm focusing on helping people connect to their authentic voice, their authentic message in a way that they can deliver a talk or lead a group or speak with another person in a one-on-one conversation from a place that's deeply connected to who you are. And there's no better way to come across authentically, to be received well, for people to take you seriously, and to have a big impact. And so I'm focusing not only on the words that you say, but and this sounds a little woo-woo maybe, but it's kind of like the who you are, like who are you when you show up to speak? What kind of mindset are you in? What's your frame of mind? How connected are you really to what you're saying and to your audience? Because these days people want authenticity, and they want an experience more than, you know, a how-to, right?
And I think it's an amazingly important aspect these days as well, particularly with, you know, we were already, you know, pre-COVID, we were already in this space where we're picking up our phones every 10 seconds, we're checking for these alerts, we're checking our emails, and then it's even harder to keep somebody's attention in a meeting and by keep someone's attention, I mean them keeping their attention on the speaker more so than necessarily just the speaker. That a lot of us, I remember nearly this time last year having friends ringing me up and messaging me like, oh, how do I use this Zoom stuff? How do I do this? And I'd been using Zoom for podcasts and for meetings and different things for years. And it was just thrust upon the world that, and I call it the Zoom economy that we're in now. And, with people coming in and they're getting Zoom fatigue, they're getting Microsoft Teams fatigue, where they're not being mindful in these particular meetings, they're not being mindful in the way that they communicate. And I'm sure that leads to a lot of other things down the track. Is that what you're kind of seeing?
I mean, the ability to be present with a conversation and really connect personally with people is a skill. It's something that you can work on. And if you didn't have a lot of that one-on-one, then you take it into a virtual environment and you're at a disadvantage already. And I don't say a lot, but at least some, because in a virtual environment, you're talking to just faces on a two-dimensional screen, you're not in the same living and breathing space as someone else. There's not a person present. And there's a huge difference there. I wrote an article on this, like 8 ways to be more mindful in a virtual meeting, because I found it I found that some of the things that I'd learned, people aren't talking about very much. But yes, it is a different skill set. So you have to be mindful, or have some capacity to be mindful in a meeting. And you're looking at a screen going, well, now how do I apply that here? Because it's different, and it really is. There's a big transition there. But now, thankfully, we're seeing sort of the beginning of emergence of live events again. In the TEDx world, they're starting to populate 2021 later in the year. Events are starting to appear in the US at any rate. So I know that things are starting to get on the map for live events again.
And so before we kind of dive into, because I know some of our audience will be really interested in having more mindful conversations or presenting themselves more as a mindful speaker. And I know it's always great being the podcast host or the podcast guest, because you really have to be mindful throughout it. Otherwise, you just go on it.
Just mindfully speaking, I would say, so you're noticing that you have an extra incentive to be present in this conversation because of the topic, right?
Or otherwise I have to do a lot of editing post, because there's just big areas where I'm off in another world. But how do, because I mean, it's a really hot topic now, mindfulness, meditation, all of these particular things, particularly in the workplace. It's really great to kind of explore that in the speaking side of things. How did that come about? Like, how did you, fall into this world of mindfulness?
Mindfulness itself is something I studied as a practice to become a better coach / therapist. I didn't actually start a therapy training, but I trained as one. And so I started studying with, there's a branch of theory called somatic psychology, which is, a big word sound, a big phrase that really means about, let's just call it whole body psychology. It's sort of like, you not only listen to what someone is saying, but how they're saying it, who they are, how are they presenting, how is their body language interacting with what's going on. It's a really big picture thing. And to do that work, you have to be really present. It requires mindfulness on the part of the therapist to be really present. And then also the work with the client involves them entering into a mindful state where you do little experiments of mindfulness. So you get someone really clear and just present, and it's as simple as just imagine that you're just still, and you're like, you're in a movie and you don't know what's going to show, but you're just waiting in a theater all by yourself, and you're just calm, and then imagine what happens when you hear, or what goes on for you when you hear these words, and you might say something to them like, you're really a good person. And then they would say, oh, well, when I hear that, I hear this voice going, you're not a good person. And or they go, yeah, I really hear that. And there's no right or wrong, but you're just looking, you're exploring the territory of what goes on for people when they hear certain words or phrases. Now, that's a little deeper into Hakomi than this. And then, by the way, the method I studied was called Hakomi. That's Hakomi. Then I normally get into, but it requires of the therapist particularly a very high level of attention. So it's very active mindfulness. You're paying attention very closely to everything going on. And once I learned to do that, I found that I was in the technical world and I had a career in technology, and I became a technical evangelist for Microsoft, and I did some work for Adobe and some other big companies. And I actually wound up speaking at the big Microsoft events quite a bit and all around the country. And I found I was using those same mindfulness skills on stage. And so there was just a natural segue for me to take those same skills to a bigger audience. Does that help?
Yeah. And so there's something that you said there that I think will both be beneficial, but I'd like to know, more of the how, you said you took those to the stage, and you're obviously speaking with Microsoft, but what does that look like, taking those things to the stage? Because I mean,
Great question. No, I'm sorry. That's a great question. And really it amounts to taking me, okay, Brett, and any person who has got these skills. Okay, you've got a skill set and you land on a stage, right? Now, all right. So I'm noticing, what's it like for me to step onto the stage? And I'm using mindfulness going, all right, this feels really different. You know, I'm feeling it in my body. I'm going, this, okay, I'm looking at all these people. This is really different than having a conversation at the restaurant or talking to a group in a meeting room or a Zoom call. It's a, and obviously this is, you're going, yeah, of course it is intellectually, but I'm not talking about it intellectually. I'm talking about it from a feeling level. And then looking at that environment going, okay, I'm going to take a breath here. I'm going to adapt. I'm going to make this my new now. This is my new normal, right? I'm talking to this audience and let the audience be a part of my personal experience. Like make it personal, right? This, you guys are in my world now, right? Right. This room is all my kitchen, right? Yep. And so suddenly I'm inviting everybody into my personal space rather than, oh, I'm on stage and there are the lights and I know the countdown timer is going and all, and rather than all the things that can rattle you. And it helps to settle you and ground you in a, oh yeah. And in particular, if you've done this a few times, it becomes familiar and it begins to cue up a memory system in you where you, oh, there are the lights and there's the microphone. I know this, this is familiar to me. Which is a good tip, by the way. One of the things I would advise people who haven't done much stage work and they want to is get yourself on a stage, stand on it, and get familiar with what it feels like, even if there's nobody else in the room.
Yeah, just let your. And I mean, we see it with athletes, and yeah, they say they've already seen the kick go over or the shot go in, and yeah, they've practiced it and they've done it, and then you know you go, well, how, you haven't actually been there, and
yeah,
that matter of, you know, oh, I've stepped onto the court, I've envisioned it, I've gone through all of these, and it also allows you to and like you say, not worrying about the worst, but also being able to go, oh well, what if there's a table there on the stage when I'm speaking? Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm fine with that. And what if the microphone goes down? Oh, well, the room's not that big. I'll be able to just raise my voice slightly and be able to.
Well, and that's really key, like having the presence to adapt to in the moment things that occur. In technical presentations, there's almost always questions, and some of those can come inside what I call sideways, you know, like they're unexpected, or they maybe even a little challenging, like, well, I don't really believe what you just said, and learning to adapt and manage and deal with all those things skillfully is a mindfulness really helps a great deal with not getting derailed by any of those kinds of things, and keeping your center, keeping yourself in a grounded place.
And so you went in this the space of speaking at the, I guess, the technical level. So that was that, mm-hmm. was that training organizations on Microsoft products or speaking at their events, or what did that
all,
kind of
all like? Of the above. I ran road shows where we flew around the world and taught people how to do things with Microsoft operating systems. And also I was invited to speak at Microsoft Ignite, and used to be called Tech Ed back in the day, on a variety of things, usually related to either web server security or cloud services, because I was a cloud services expert. Still am to a certain degree, less so, but pretty involved with it. So
with a lot of these speaking events that you were in, were there ways that you, or what were the ways that you best leveraged those events? So yeah, if you were invited to speak at a stage that wasn't, say, pre-organized as a training, were there ways that you, and I mean, when I mean leverage, it may be that you interacted with people in a particular way, or that you got more training scheduled off the back of it, or you got meetings with particular people. Were there any things that you did consistently that speaking opened doors for?
Oh, you're talking about the outcome of the events, like how that helped in a business world?
Yeah. So, I mean, when you went to, say, a particular, if you were invited to speak at an event, were there, I call it the Trojan horse. Like, was there, you know, getting your foot in that door? I often find when I speak somewhere, it usually opens another door. And so, you know, was speaking at one event, did that open? And were there particular things that you did, or was it just by giving a good presentation, people came to you after the fact?
It's a both and, in the sense that I part of it is my role. Like in some of these talks, I was working as a full-time employee for Microsoft. And so the payoff was they then go and purchase Microsoft products or services. And then there was a time when I was doing this for myself. And so it was always, I was in the business of selling my services as a Microsoft expert. And so standing up on a stage at a Microsoft event invited by Microsoft is sort of the outcome here. That's the Holy Grail, right? So you stand there and go, oh, here's Brett. We invited him as an expert in this topic. He's going to speak to you. And then, of course, after that, people were going, well, hey, can you come to my company and teach us how to do that kind of stuff? And so, yes, that was, I had a training company back in the day, and I was always getting, requests to come and do this for them personally, or do one-on-one consulting to bring somebody along in a technical detail. So yes, that worked off that way as well.
Yeah, cool. And now as you're transitioning into the mindfulness side of things, what does that look like obviously things have changed over the last year. Yes. and the way that things are applied, but what does that look like, or what is it going to look like moving forward for the application and the teachings of what you do in there?
Well, I am more or less a startup at this stage. I'm getting the word out there about what I'm trying to do, and which is focus on how to use language mindfully, which is a lot harder than it sounds. First, you have to have a capacity to be mindful, and then there are what I call mindful skills, mindful communication skills that you can only use when you're mindful, and they're exceptionally powerful skills. So first, you learn to be mindful. You develop the ability to be mindful, and my catchword on that is, catchphrase is, if you want to be mindful when you're under stress, like when you're speaking and on stage, you have to practice when you're not. And so there are skills that you need to do, just like if you want to learn to be a good speaker, there are speaking techniques that you can practice when you're not on stage, right? You do it in advance. Same thing with mindfulness. Once you develop that, then there are specific kinds of things that you can do. Now, so I'm developing a language of mindfulness book and a training and one-on-one coaching all around helping people at various levels of in business and personally to develop those kinds of skills.
Yeah, nice. And it's such an interesting thing when you speak about the mindfulness side of things. It's and we're going to touch on this shortly is on the TEDx side of things. I've given a TEDx talk, and it was I've spoken about it on the podcast in the past, but it was the most difficult presentation that I've ever given. Not because of nerves on being on the stage. I'm more than comfortable being on the stage. Yeah, it's still the excitement, I think, more so of standing on the red dot, but. Mm-hmm. It was with this particular event, and I'm sure it's having spoken to a lot of TEDx speakers, it's a having to have the speech more or less memorized and hand in a transcript of the speech prior. So I was overseas speaking I was living in Australia and speaking at an event back in New Zealand. So I was just doing coaching with the organizers, with the speaking team there, and going over my ideas, but you had to submit a transcript. And then at the dress rehearsal, you had to go over your presentation, and it had to be, let's say 95% online with your, because they're protecting your brand. Like, I get it. They don't want people to go AWOL and go for 30 minutes when they're meant to be going for 18.
Yes, exactly.
But having to have the reason I laugh is because my topic was mindfulness, and I'm not.
Oh no, I didn't know that.
And here's the thing. I wouldn't say I'm anywhere in the realm of being an expert or even near an expert. It was my previous podcast was interviewing young entrepreneurs, and we talked about what was one of the biggest differentiators that these highly successful under 30 year olds had. And the common theme was, a lot of them were using mindfulness. And so, but it was, this is where I found it quite ironic is because you're trying to remember a memorized presentation, mm-hmm. And then you've obviously got to have a degree of stage presence when you're on there. So you're trying to use your hands and emotion and things, which usually comes naturally to me if I'm speaking extemporaneously or ad lib or off points. And instead you've got half of your brain working towards making sure you remember this memorized speech, the other half doing a theatrical act of using your hands to make it look natural. And then here's the irony, is you're speaking about being mindful.
Right. And so there's a part of you watching you do all this stuff. Yeah. It's a little maddening, right?
Yeah. And you're sitting there going, oh my God, am I really, how mindful am I really being when I'm not, I mean, you can't see the audience anyway, because the lights are too bright, but you're sitting there, you're going, I'm not even, you come off and it's done. And I mean, things went well and it was, it was an enjoyable experience, but it was just such a, backstage there were other speakers and they were speaking at the biggest tech startups in Silicon Valley and stuff like that. And they're like, that was the hardest presentation that I've ever done. Yeah. memorizing 18 minutes of a presentation.
I understand.
But I mean, you've got to understand that, they are protecting a brand, and TED and TEDx wouldn't be where it was if they let people just go on 40 minute.
What a great experience for you, just personally to be able to pull that off and have that and know what that's like. And it certainly makes you well qualified to talk about, this is what it's like, and be able to provide value to other people.
Well, what I found really interesting from my side, obviously helping a lot of people with their public speaking, is it had been so many years since I had a memorized presentation. I'm talking 13, 14 years old in English class with your 3 minute memorized or cue carded presentation. Since I had had lessons myself when I was younger to then teaching people, I hadn't memorized. Whereas I knew a lot of people would try and memorize a lot of their presentation. So it was a lot more rubber meets the road for me when I'm actually talking about it than just saying, look, you don't want to memorize a presentation in general, generally speaking, because of this and this. I can say,
it's true. TEDx is a very structured delivery process. It's a very structured framework, and they get reasonably high quality outcomes as a result of it. But you know what you're getting with the TEDx talk, and they do vary in terms of the amount of input and structure and rigidity from TEDx venue to TEDx venue. But what I'm hearing you say is not uncommon from the people that I've talked to.
Yeah. And so I wanted to touch on that, because you've been accepted, in amongst this crazy world that we're into, two different TEDx events. And you were saying off air that one has fallen off the radar just because of the world that we're currently in. But there's obviously an art of getting in front, or not necessarily an art, but it's just like an application for a grant or anything like that, that, you want to be able to put your best foot forward, and to be able to be accepted twice, there must have been something that you were doing that, a lot of people out there are aspiring to get on that stage. And it is apart from being a great marker for organizations to know that, this person has been on this particular stage, they must really know what they're on about. A lot of people want to do it because, and this is speaking from my own experience, it's an event where people aren't trying to upsell you. There's an event. Yeah. It's an event where people haven't, they've got an internal motivator or a bias or anything like that, but they haven't at the same time. They're looking to educate and put a positive impact on the world. It's, of their life's work. So I know a lot of people want to get out onto those stages. Any tips that you've found or starting points that you'd recommend for the listeners out there on how they might be able to get their throw their hat in the ring, so to speak, for
sure. That's a great question. There are quite a few, I would say, items on the checklist that you have to check the boxes before you start to feel really solid that you've got something that is going to get accepted. So first of all, I started with an idea. This is the bottom line. You have to be convinced that in your bones that what you have to say is important, it matters, and people need to hear it. When you have that, then it's a matter of, okay, how do I frame this? Now, let's take that and then let's segue over to what is the TEDx events looking for? Their phrase is ideas worth spreading, right? So that's the thing, the number one thing is that you have to have an idea that's worth spreading, which means it can't be like these days, there's been a million TEDx talks on mindfulness. So pitching mindfulness is a difficult thing. Because it's happened so much. Everybody heard about it now. There's been a lot of the bases are covered. So you need a new angle. So what I came up with was the language of mindfulness. It's sort of like what goes on between us. And so my pitch is like, mindfulness is what we often think of as a meditation or a solo thing. What happens when we bring mindfulness into the world between us? What does that then make possible? And I'm deeply passionate about this because I feel like it makes your world personally a better place, the world of the people that you interact with a better place, and organizations you facilitate or in part of, and who knows, politically and organizationally, it helps everything. So I'm a big believer in this. And when I communicate that passion, it comes across. People get it and they go, God, not only do I hear it, I can feel it. So you have to be able to communicate the feeling of your conviction in an honest and open way. If you can do that and you have an idea that you believe in, that you think is unique, and so someone who hears it, they go, huh, that's the thing you want. Someone hears your talk and you want them to go, as opposed to, oh, well, I've got 43 references for that. Yeah, I've got one, but that one's interesting. If you've got something like that, go for it, because they want you. That's the other thing, is to be convinced that they want to hear, they want you. And when they read what you've got to say on paper, and you can do a 1 or 2 or 3 minute pitch, because you're going to need all of those to apply. For me, I applied to 57 events. 57. And that's what it took. And you can do it. Anyone can do it. It's just a matter of figuring it out.
That's, yeah, I think that's the big thing is if people, I think it's a two-phased approach, and what you pitch likely won't be your final topic or won't be what it looks like. It will, as in the language of mindfulness, but you might flesh that idea out and then you start, you know, putting the actual 18-minute presentation together.
Well, no kidding. I work iteratively, which is both a benefit and a failure for me, in the sense I write it and then I rewrite it. And then on the third time, I finally get it right. And yeah, good Lord, yes, I wrote that thing, 12 times and I finally refined it.
Yeah, well, I mean, mine was, you know, I think it started with entrepreneurship into schools for the youth. And then it was, talking about... it was like lateral thinking and mindfulness and something. And like mindfulness was maybe a minute of my first iteration, of what I'd pitched. And yeah, it wasn't a huge part. It was like, 1 or 2 or 3 minutes at the most of a 18 minute presentation. And then, that's quite an interesting angle. And then that ended up being fleshed. And so it was from what I initially thought I was working at to that, but being able to, these barriers of entry, and this is only in my opinion, with the TEDx space, is what is going to allow you as a speaker to thrive. In that, most people just hope that, oh, I've spoken somewhere, or oh, I'll send them an email and say, you know, I know lots about this particular thing.
Yeah, that's the wrong way to go.
Yeah, and so it's these, oh God, I have to shoot a 3-minute video, or I have to shoot it, a little video with my idea. Well, A, they're not just doing it to get your idea. They're looking to see, can you hold a conversation? Are you?
Well, right. The TEDx, put yourself in this role of the person managing the TEDx. Your job is to have people walk away from that TEDx event going, wow, that was a great experience. Some of those speakers were amazing. That's their job. And so you need to be able to be one of those people. And And the other thing that your listeners should know is that TEDx organizers are not looking for professional speakers. They're not looking for paid speakers. In fact, they often won't take applications from professional speakers. And so it's there's no other opportunity like that. And here's one other thing. If you're one of the main reasons you want to do a TEDx is because by contract, they are required to video it and it then goes up on TEDx. And that means your potential audience is unlimited versus the people you're speaking to in the room. That's the real value to you as a speaker.
Here's my tip, having done one. Make sure you chat with the organizer before they submit your video to make sure that you've got a catchy title, because mine doesn't. Mine literally was just uploaded and says mindfulness.
Oh no.
So it doesn't capture, like, it's not clickbaity. It's not a title that creates intrigue. It's not anything. It's just kind of, so, and then, you know, you message TED.
It's a good link on your website though.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. 100%. But I mean, when you put the hard work, and I'm talking from both me and, you know, the organization and event team, when you all put that hard work in, you want it to get,
absolutely
reach as many people as possible. And you message TED after the fact and they say, look, we get, you know, X amount of speeches per week uploaded. We can't go tweaking them.
That's really unfortunate.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was no malice or no one's fault or anything. It was just more.
No, that's a great tip.
Yeah. So it's interesting because you have a look at the best ones and they've got that title that creates some intrigue that makes people want to.
Well, and they vary in quality as well. So it's a good idea to say, who's recording? How are you going to do audio? You know, this is the reason you're doing it. And so you have a legitimate interest in ensuring that the quality bar is not going to sabotage your efforts.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I think that's it's great for those looking to jump into or throw their hat into the TED space. And that's some great tips there. But I think, for those of you out there who may be looking to throw their hat into the TED side of things, or even just into the speaking side of things, and you're looking to be more mindful with your presentations, or look at the language you're using within your presentations. If people are looking to find out more about that, where can they go and what can they do, Brett?
Well, my website, languageofmindfulness.com, which is, I know a lot to write, but it works, languageofmindfulness.com. And you can, there's contact information there. I will talk with anybody I offer a free half an hour consult. So we can bat around your ideas, see what you want, come to, if I can help you, I say it straight up. I'm not in the business of trying to say, well, you, for $1,200 today, you can get, you know, I'm not that guy. But I'm just really, really interested in helping people to land in their authentic voice, to connect to their truth, and to learn how to communicate that in one-on-one conversations, one-on group conversations, or one-on many conversations, like in speaking as well. So you can reach me at the website. I do have a TEDx 101 document that I wrote, which is available to anybody that wants to at my website, languageofmindfulness.com/TEDx101. And it's about a 15-page PDF to get started with that. That is some of the shortcuts that I found to be useful. It's not so much about mindfulness, it's about the craft of applying to TEDx's.
Yep.
But if you're interested in that, we should talk, because I can help you come across in a way that is going to, you need to be able to create those 1-minute videos or 2-minute videos in a way where they communicate you as much as, or even more so than the message. Because that's what people want these days. They want this personal connection with people. And that's a skill that you can learn.
Well, yeah, well, we'll definitely link all of that at publicspeakingblueprint.com, where you can find that in all our other episodes. This has been amazing. I love, obviously, being able to chat to so many different interesting people throughout different spaces of the speaking world, and even having been engrossed in the speaking world for a long time, I'm always finding out different ways that, you know, my, not only myself, but my students and others can improve their speaking, whether it be vocal training or the clothes to wear on stage to, yeah, or branding, or, and now the language of mindfulness and mindfulness with onto the stage. So I really, really thank you for doing that. And like I say, if to everyone, we'll be able to find all the links at publicspeakingblueprint.com. And I look forward to keeping this connection growing and staying in touch.
Thanks a ton. Appreciate you having me here. It's great talking to you, and I really appreciate the chance.
Thanks a lot.
If you want to fast track your confidence and impact with public speaking, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com, where there's an array of free resources to help you no matter where you are on your journey to becoming a more powerful speaker. And while you're at it, jump over to Facebook and join our free community called Speaker Nation, where there's a ton of other like-minded individuals just like yourself looking to level up. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode.